This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Multinational corporations would like to turn the gorgeous port of Vancouver, Canada, into another fossil fuel colony after coal port proposals were blocked by a public outcry in the American Pacific Northwest. They want to ship coal out to Asia through Vancouver. There's an active proposal to steer dirty tar sands oil into hundreds of tankers through Vancouver's scenic inlets. Even liquid natural gas is trying to use Vancouver as an outlet. We've reached activist Kevin Washbrook in Vancouver. He's part of the group Voters Taking Action on Climate Change, or VTAC. Kevin, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, Alex. Nice to be here.
Let's talk about coal. How big is the export business from Vancouver?
Well, right now we have two fully functioning coal ports, one in North Vancouver, Neptune Terminal, which exports exclusively BC metallurgical coal from the Kootenays, and then West Shore Terminals in Tsawwassen, which is the biggest coal port in Canada, and depending on who's exporting more, it's often the biggest or the busiest coal port in North America. Neptune exports around, they export around 6 million tons of coal a year. They're trying to expand that to larger volumes. West Shore exports on the order of 30 to 33 million tons of coal a year. And about 8 million tons of that coal is U.S. thermal coal from the Powder River Basin.
Wow. So they truck it all, or they train it all the way up from Wyoming, I guess it is.
It is. And so it comes on Warren Buffett's BNSF Railroad up through Semiahmoo First Nation, White Rock, Crescent Beach, all along the water through there, and then up through around Mud Bay and over to West Shore Terminals.
Why aren't they using American coal ports?
Well, that's a good question. There were plans for six coal ports on the U.S. West Coast as recently as 3 or 4 years ago. And all about two of those projects have either been completely rejected or abandoned. And the last two, the one in Oregon on the Columbia River, faces serious difficulties because it's failed to receive key permits. The last project and the largest at Cherry Point in Washington, so just south of the border, also faces serious opposition, including from the Lummi Nation, which has said outright, we reject this, you're not going to build it. So public outcry, public opposition, and really strong community organizing in the states has stopped all these projects. So that leaves BC, it's sort of the back door or the dirty doormat for U.S. coal on its way to Asia. And so right now they have been exporting this 7 million tons a year for some time, or 7 to 8 million tons. By way of comparison, the Cherry Point coal port proposal in Bellingham would be about 48 million tons of coal a year. And there is this new proposal to build a brand new coal port on the Fraser River in Surrey to export exclusively American coal, 4 million tons now, probably more in the future.
Great. So what problems do coal trains pose for local communities?
Well, yeah, that's a good point, too, because and especially in BC and in Metro Vancouver, because we have this port authority that has, it's a federal agency. It's sort of almost like a crown corporation, but it's also a regulator. It has absolute power over decision-making on port lands, and that's the land basically all along the waterline in Metro Vancouver. So they can approve a coal port, but they take no responsibility for the external impacts that generates, and the one you're mentioning now is key, coal trains. So coal trains going through communities, they're extremely loud, and they often travel at night, and the noise levels from these things are over 100 decibels when the whistles are going. And that exceeds, the World Health Organization says nighttime noise levels should be below 30 decibels for young people, for the elderly, for the sick. There's noise. There's also vibration, and that there's problems in White Rock with the cliff faces slumping because of the vibration. There's also a lot of concern over coal dust. We don't know how much coal dust is lost from these trains, and we don't know what the health impacts of long-term exposure to low levels of particulate are from the dust. So that's an issue. One of the biggest concerns is diesel exhaust. We know diesel exhaust is a carcinogen. Diesel particulate is a carcinogen. And these trains run, within a kilometer of a number of schools and daycares and senior centers. They're already running now, and the plan is to run more of them. So people are rightly concerned about all those local impacts.
How have activists raised Vancouver's dirty coal profile in the media there?
Yeah, it's been an interesting process. Well, in the fall of 2012, a community member in Surrey told me about these two proposals, the expansion at Neptune and the new coal port in Surrey at Fraser Surrey Docks. And when I looked at the numbers, if you added up all the proposed capacity, if all of that coal is exported, it would be more global warming pollution than, the Northern Gateway Pipeline. It's a huge, huge issue, but it's all piecemeal and it was under the radar. So over the past 2.5 years, we've managed to raise the profile immensely. Our organization and a group based in Surrey called Communities in Coal and Dogwood Initiative and others. And it's been an interesting process of working with local governments one by one, getting them on board about the issues, having them call or put forward motions calling for, you know, proper public assessment or health risk assessment of these projects. We eventually presented before Metro Vancouver, and the region eventually opposed this coal port in Surrey outright. Various health leaders, you know, climate scientists, community leaders have all come out saying they're opposed to this. Everything from the BC Nurses Union to Van City Credit Union to the Fishermen's Union to, you know, all sorts of groups have said this is a bad idea. So, you know, we've held various rallies and events, and we've presented at the Port Authority AGM, and it's really a simple issue. You know, we're saying the Port Authority can't make decisions that affect our future as a region without including us in those decisions, and they're an extremely arrogant and remote organization. So, The contrast is so stark that I think media understands this and the broader public gets that. You know, you can't do things like this anymore. It's you know, the 19th century, and they're not, you know, captains of industry. We're a democratic society.
Yeah, NASA scientist James Hansen famously was arrested protesting mountaintop removal for coal. But in Vancouver, I was tracking Simon Fraser University professor and world energy expert Mark Jacquard was arrested blocking a coal train. So it sounds like you are getting significant buy-in there.
Yeah, it's a pretty compelling story because it's a very stark one. You know, we know that we need to radically reduce the use of fossil fuels to avoid dangerous climate change. And one study after another is coming out saying that, you know, we can probably burn a bit more of the oil and a bit more of the gas, but we absolutely can't burn more coal. You know, 80% or more of coal has to remain in the ground if we're going to avoid blowing past any sort of safe thresholds for climate change. And if that's the case, and I believe it's true based on everything I've read, then there is simply no valid argument for building a new coal port anywhere in the world. Because once you build it, they're going to want to use it, right? So it's very black and white for me. Not many things are in life, but this is very black and white. A new coal port in Surrey is a bad idea. U.S. thermal coal exports through Metro Vancouver is a bad idea. And it's something that's worth standing up and saying no to, saying, I don't think this is right.
Trying to stop fossil fuel exports is like playing the game whack-a-mole. You find one project, then another one pops up, like the recent proposal to ship out liquid natural gas via the historic Fraser River. Tell us what's happening there.
Well, that's another interesting thing. You know, what's kind of most interesting about this team, I guess I should say most frustrating, is that there's no real effort by government to make people aware of these things. You know, I literally stumbled across this proposal because I was on the BC Environmental Assessment Project or Office website, and there's a new proposal recently posted from this U.S. company, Westpac Midstream, to build an LNG terminal on the Fraser. And if you know where to look, if you go there, you can see that and you can make comment. But if you don't know, you're not going to find out. And the government doesn't go along the Fraser and, you know, put up things on billboards or on telephone poles and say, are you concerned about this? The federal government has given us from, you know, so this proponent, when they realize their project is a certain size, they have to let the BC and federal governments know, and the governments have to decide to do an assessment or not. So Ottawa, you know, in its wisdom, on May the 22nd said, okay, we'll accept comments from the public until June the 11th to help us decide if we should even do an assessment or not, and furthermore, if we should substitute a provincial assessment for the federal one. So if you didn't go to the CEA website, the Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency website, and see that notice, you would never have even known that there was a comment period. It's very frustrating because, you know, these are big things and we all need to have a say. So anyways, to back up to the proposal, this is a plan for a brand new LNG terminal on the Fraser River in Delta, BC, next to the two cement plants that are across the river and just upstream from, if you know, Richmond. There's sort of a place called Watermania and a big movie complex and all that sort of stuff. It would see 120 LNG tankers a year and 90 LNG barges a year going up and down the Fraser River. Now, in comparison, some people are somewhat more aware of this proposal for wood fiber LNG in Squamish. It's had a lot of press. This proposal in the Fraser would be 1.5 times as large. Also in comparison, the big Petronas Pacific Energy LNG project in Prince Rupert would be about 7 times larger. So this is a fairly small project, but it would still see a lot of LNG tankers on the river. the proponent, and this to me is typical, the project summary description, it says, we want to build this facility, this is the footprint, we're going to look at endangered plants and archaeological sites and whatnot right here, but once we sell that LNG and it goes onto an LNG tanker, it's someone else's responsibility. We're not going to assess those risks. That's crazy. You know, that's absolutely crazy. And in the United States, if you want to build an LNG terminal, the Department of Homeland Security and the Coast Guard require that you conduct a waterway suitability assessment on the entire tanker route out to international waters to a distance of 3.5 kilometers on each side, because that's how far, you know, an unignited cloud of LNG vapor can travel and still be explosive. In BC, that doesn't happen. And there's no one asking the fundamental question, is it a good idea to build an LNG terminal in the Fraser River? They're just simply, let's look and see if this will endanger plants or salmon or sturgeon at the site of the facility. It's a very narrow, blinkered approach to assessing these kinds of projects.
Wait a minute. You're saying that a cloud can come off of one of those tankers if they were to leak that would go 3.5 kilometers, possibly on either side of the river, into an area where millions of people live?
Yeah, no, that's no case. So let me back up and qualify that. So in the United States, there is a thing called Sandia National Laboratory, S-A-N-D-I-A, and they conducted a study in the mid-2000s that said, you know, how are we going to assess the risks from LNG tankers and what sort of guidelines are we going to create to assess these things? So they said, what's the worst-case scenario? Well, the worst-case scenario is, you know, an intentional rupture of containment of all the LNG vessels on a tanker from something like a terrorist attack or an explosion. So in that worst-case scenario, what hazards would be created? And so they said, well, within 500 meters, you know, everything would be burned to a crisp. And up to 1,600 meters, you'd have burn hazards and freezing hazards and these things, and they would decline over distance. But if that cloud of LNG, if that LNG didn't ignite right away, as it evaporates and turns to gas, before it disperses, it can still be a risk of producing a fireball up to 3.5 kilometers away. So for that worst case scenario, we're going to require that LNG proponents examine the risks all along that 3.5 kilometer route. And we want to know if there are people living there, if there are, you know, if there's significant infrastructure there, if there are, all sorts of any sort of property or public health and safety risks. Because, you know, in the States they say you got to explicitly examine the possibility of a terrorist attack, you've got to look at the worst case scenario, you've got to see what could happen if one of these things went badly wrong while en route. So that's smart to me. You know, you want to know what the risks are before you approve these things, before a port or whoever approves them. In Canada, there is no such requirement. And all they're looking at here is the footprint of this facility. And it's, to me, that's quite frightening because, you know, I am no supporter of the Harper government, but I do know that they say that the risk of terrorist threats is real on our soil. Well, if that's the case, then why aren't you looking at the risks from transporting an extremely volatile substance in these vessels through highly populated areas? That just makes sense.
Well, now, Kevin Washbrook, we know there are quite a few environmentally conscious voters in the Vancouver region. Do you worry, though, that your work to stop these proposals will push fossil fuels further north along the coast to Squamish or to northern ports like Prince Rupert or Kitimat?
That's an interesting question. I don't think so. I think, you know, those projects in the north, local people there are going to make their own assessment. I mean, I know what my thoughts are in terms of the risks to the climate from LNG, in terms of what groups like the CCPA and the Pembina Institute have figured out. But local populations are going to weigh and assess the local risks themselves, and I respect their ability to do that and their interest in doing that. I think what's going on here is that, you know, people down here are very aware that there are these big projects proposed up north, whether it's LNG or, you know, bitumen pipelines, and we often don't feel like we can have any sort of say in this kind of future for BC. But in fact, Metro Vancouver, we really are on the front lines of the fossil fuel debate, export debate, because we have proposals for the Kinder Morgan pipeline, we've got proposal for a new coal port, now we have a proposal for the LNG on the Fraser and the LNG in Squamish. So people realize there's a lot at stake here, and they are and it's more accessible when it's here. You know, you can have more of a say, you can get engaged in the debate, and you can learn more about it. So I don't think it'll push things away. I think there's so many companies trying to push forward so many projects at once that, like you said, it's a bit of a whack-a-mole. They're going to pop up wherever they feel like there's a possibility.
Where does your group, Voters Taking Action on Climate Change, find most of its support? Do young people show up, just older folks? Tell us about your supporters.
It's interesting. So, you know, most of our work is done online, really. We engage with the public through email, through social media. When we do events, I mean, we always work with other groups when we do events, too, so it's harder to say who's coming from where, but it really is a cross-section. There's a lot of older, concerned folks. And there's also a lot of young people. We work a lot with a group called Kids for Climate Action on events, and they draw out a sort of a high school audience. I think the concern is widespread, whether it's because you're worried about, you know, the local environment or whether you're worried about your future. There's something to be concerned about here for everyone, I guess, for all ages.
And so, VTAC, what do you think other communities, say, in the United States or in Britain or elsewhere, could learn from the way your group has formed and operated?
Well, interesting. I think, you know, our whole focus is trying to create opportunities for the public to express their concern to government. And we try and connect the dots between climate policy and fossil fuel exports that put our climate at risk. Because climate policy discussions are often pretty abstract. Like the thing that's happened recently with the Harper government saying that they agree to eliminate fossil fuel use by 2100. Well, 84 years from now, no one's going to be here who's alive now. And that's just an absurd abstract discussion when we have real projects right here, right now, that are threatening our climate. So I think creating opportunities for the public to engage and express their concerns are key. And, you know, we do that a lot through public commenting websites. Like right now for the LNG thing, we've set up a website called reallnghearings.org. And that brings together all the information on the Fraser River LNG proposal. And there's a commenting tool, so you can send a message directly to the Federal Environment Minister, and it's CC'd to local governments. So my experience is that people care, and they want to take action. You know, they may think that they don't know how, or they don't have the time. So you create an opportunity, you put all the information in one place, and people want to act. I guess just empowering people, that's the key, empowering people.
Can you give us your website address or your Facebook page?
Sure. Our website is vtacc.org. That's our website. But the key, where we're really focusing right now, is on LNG, and so that's through reallnghearings.org.
Great. Thank you so much. Our guest, Kevin Washbrook, is an activist in Vancouver, Canada, as part of the group Voters Taking Action on Climate Change. I appreciate your time, Kevin.
You're welcome. Take care, Alex.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.